Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. Today, we are returning to our favorite game, the Regrettable Television Pop Quiz.
Hooray! We're going to see whether we can stump each other with clips from some of the weirdest TV that we could find.
Our friend Audie Cornish is back, and you are not going to want to miss it, so don't go away.
Support for Pop Culture Happy Hour and the following message come from Microsoft Teams, a digital workspace where teams can create, collaborate, and communicate. Work, share, and connect with the people in your work life, bringing together your chats, meetings, files, and apps all in one place. So, whether you're sprinting towards a deadline or sharing your next big idea, Teams can help you and your team achieve even more. Microsoft Teams is your hub for teamwork in Office 365. Visit office.com/teams to learn more.
Welcome back. You just met NPR Music's Stephen Thompson. Also with us is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And joining us, host of NPR's All Things Considered, our dear friend, Audie Cornish. Hi, Audie.
Hello.
Audie's been away having a gorgeous baby.
I have been. Do you want to see pictures?
I
just say that now automatically.
I look at...
Show the nice people.
I look at every picture I can get my little eyeballs on. We are so happy to see you.
Good to see you guys, too.
And we figured, you know, Audie needed to come back for a very special occasion, so we decided it was time to play Regrettable Television Pop Quiz.
Now, Linda, are we going to do the song?
Are we going to do God.
The song? Is there theme music?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Regrettable Television Pop Quiz. Okay. That's the theme song.
I've not heard that before.
Yeah.
I have.
If you know how this game is played, here's how this game is played. We will play a clip that one of us has submitted. The other three of us will see if we can figure out what television show project this thing is from. And we are going to actually start with my choice. So hit me, Jessica Reedy.
In the Super Mario Brothers video game series, Mario and Luigi work primarily in what profession?
I know
what,
it.
Go on then, what are you first?
They dress the same.
What the?
What the? What's their profession? What do they do? What's their trade?
Their
what do they do as a job?
Conductor.
Plungers.
Oh, I know it, I know it.
Yes, I know it.
I know it.
Drumroll, please. End of drumroll. Plumbing.
The answer is they're plumbers. Yes.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Wow. So that's Ricky Gervais. Is this like, is there a British Kids Say the Darndest Thing? Is that what we're dealing with here?
Not exactly, no.
That's the thing. Like, well.
So you've gotten that it was Ricky Gervais.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the kids are precocious AF. So.
Are they precocious, though?
Well, they're
they're just yelling.
They're
I mean,
plungers.
Precocious to me is full sentences.
Yeah. Okay. Right. I mean, plungers was a good guess. Good start.
All right. I know we don't usually ask for hints. Is this a U.S. show?
It is. It's a U.S. show.
Really?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it syndicated?
No.
Like, is it a daytime syndicated
game? No, you guys are, I'm afraid
is
you're
it CBS? It feels like CBS.
No, it's not. No. I'm afraid you guys are not going to get it. This show is called Child Support.
What?
Isn't that funny? It is a game show. It is on ABC.
Mm. Really?
Yes. The way it works is person comes in and they receive a question from the host of the game show, Fred Savage.
Oh, and instead of that wonderful show that he was on.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. The Grinder. Fred Savage asks them a question. If they get the question wrong, then you go to existing tape of Ricky Gervais asking a group of children the question. Wow. And if one of the children gets it right, then you're saved and you can't win as much money, but you're still in the game. It's like the kids are your lifeline, but it's all pre-taped and they always want to play the kids, which means they always play the kids whether you get the question right or wrong.
Oh, wow.
Which means you got to listen to that on every single question.
Oh, boy.
And I will tell you, this show premiered in January. It was part of my project to attempt to watch at least one episode of everything that premiered in January. Even though we are now past January, I am still trying to make good on that by going back and catching all of them. I thought it was going to be like the trashy reality shows that killed me. It's the game shows that are killing me. Watching a whole episode of this was quite difficult, partly because I want better for Fred Savage and partly just because who wants to watch that?
It doesn't have a kids say the darndest things kind of appeal.
Occasionally.
Isn't that the whole point? I mean, make children say cute things?
Occasionally they say something funny, but it's sort of like that. Like the kid says they dress the same. And it's sort of not a good answer, but it's not inherently hilarious.
How often do you get the cackling Ricky Gervais laughter?
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
So is the idea being like, you got the question wrong, hardy har har, these kids will know it? So it's a little bit of like, are you smarter than a fifth grader thing? A
little bit of that,
yep. Oh, mm-hmm. Child support.
Yeah.
Except, little rusty, folks.
Yeah. So it's child support. You have the support of children who you have to hope are smarter than you.
Mm.
So that is child support. And next up, okay, I think it's time for our clip from Stephen Thompson. Hit it, Jessica Reedy.
You know, in the past, all football games get started with a coin toss. No way, Jose. Two players, one ball. Whoever possesses the ball gets his choice, not only for the start of the game, but also for overtime, should that be necessary. Good luck, guys.
This ain't your daddy's coin toss.
Should that be necessary?
Is that person talking, Jesse Ventura?
No. The thing is, you're in the ballpark, though.
I was going to say, I feel like this is related to the fact that they were just talking about reinvigorating the XFL.
It's the XFL.
This is the XFL.
From the first game that was ever televised of XFL football in early 2001. We were so innocent then. That was Dick Butkus. Who had a stake in the Chicago Enforcers of the XFL. And he's announcing one of the many twists. To back up slightly, the XFL was the rival.
Help me out here.
Yeah, it's the rival football league started by Vince McMahon with what was then called the World Wrestling Federation.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got football personalities and wrestling personalities together to do this kind of like, it's football, but it's extreme.
Mm. We're in that late 90s, early 2000s kind of extremification.
Right, where you slap an X in front of everything.
Slap an X
or
in,
three.
In front of everything, extreme Doritos and so forth. My impression of the XFL was the hope was you could take NFL football and get it to have more of the appeal of wrestling, which is why they did stuff like on the back of your jersey, you could have anything you wanted. It didn't have to be your name. It could just be, so there was the guy who's the back of his jersey said,
He hate me.
Mm-hmm.
That guy went on to play in the NFL for a bunch of years, by the way.
Oh, really? Tim, he hate me.
Tim, he hate me. Good player.
But what Dick Butkus is announcing there is one of the twists, the whole, no way, Jose, not just a coin toss.
You can sense he's really feeling it.
Yeah. Because coin tosses are for babies. What they set up is the opening scramble. The two players are running after the same ball, and whoever recovers the ball, the team gets possession. It took all the way until week one for a player to become horribly injured in this particular twist. And if you go back and watch a lot of like XFL footage, the way they marketed it was like football, but not so namby-pamby. So like they would market the hits and cracks and wow, does it not age well at all.
Yeah.
So anyway, the reason I brought this particular clip is that Vince McMahon is planning to bring back the XFL.
Wow.
For 2020.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. We are going to roll on to our clip brought to us by Glenn Weldon.
Yes, but before you listen to it, I do not think this is going to stump y'all. I think you're going to get this one. And speaking of stump, the person who the first voice you hear will be a man mentioning his arm. What you must know about this is that his arm at the time is severed from his body, but it is also sentient and moving around on its own.
Guys, check out my arm. I think my arm's trying to write something.
Somebody get a pen.
Schmidt?
This is madness.
Go. Oh, that's creepy. Gosh. Vodkov. Open? What are you talking about, arm?
Even I know this one.
What are you talking about, arm?
What are you talking about, arm?
You have guesses. You all know what this is.
Mm-hmm. Is this the new Cloverfield paradox?
This is the Cloverfield paradox.
Is it Chris Dowd or Chris?
That was Chris Dowd.
Chris O'Dowd.
That's Chris O'Dowd, exactly. Okay. Part of an amazing cast. Gugu Mbatha-Raw, David Oyelowo, Daniel Brühl, Chris O'Dowd, Zhang Zi. Great cast. Yeah. Lousy movie. And it's regrettable television because, of course, it was advertised all of a sudden during the Super Bowl as coming to Netflix as soon as the Super Bowl is done.
Yeah.
It was exciting, right?
I was going to say, it's a great idea.
It's a great idea.
It's not regrettable marketing.
No.
It's regrettable marketing.
I mean, this thing cost $45 million to make, right? And it was delayed by Paramount many, many times. Netflix bought it for something like $50 million, so they made out, right? It originated as a separate screenplay called God Particle, and that script is floating around online, like an early version of the script, before it was attached to the Cloverfield name. And that script is everything the Cloverfield paradox isn't. It's small, and it's sort of like a murder mystery in space, and it has the same premise, which is a floating space station where they do a particle accelerator, something goes wrong because movie, and then, you know, weird things start to happen. So J.J. Abrams bought it in like 2012, that script, and made this thing in complete secrecy and added all this random, stupid weirdness and no real connection to the Cloverfield franchise, except at the very, very end. So you keep expecting either J.J. Abrams or the Cloverfield monster to turn to the camera and say, I heartily endorse this event or product, because it has no connection at all. And what happens when this major experiment goes wrong? Well, walls start to eat people, and somebody's eye goes a little wonky, and there's worms. And at one point, they have a character say, logic doesn't apply anymore. It's like, well, you can't. You're cheating.
Yeah.
You can't
some
do that.
Some logic has to. It it's can like, be twisted logic, yeah, but there it's has like, to be some logic.
It's like when you're playing tag as a kid and the kid just stops and goes, yeah, this is home base now. And you're like, no, it isn't.
But don't you
we
think at this
driveway.
Point the Cloverfield folks are trolling us all?
Yeah.
I feel like this is just a massive exercise in how can we keep you hooked on an idea? They're just amusing themselves.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Wasn't part of the point of the success of the Cloverfield movies is that they were very inexpensive.
Right.
Yeah.
And then turn around and make bazillions of dollars. Like they were just money generating machines. This one, how did this one end up costing $45 million?
Because it does have special effects in it, because it is set in space, and because they had to pay for the, you know, a pretty good cast.
Yeah, that's a very good cast.
And it's an ensemble cast, right? And it looks fine, but it doesn't look $45 million. And this story goes nowhere, does nothing, and it's a big oof.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because I think what this is best for is proof of concept, right? Because what they've done here, even though the movie is, I have not seen it. The only reviews I've read have been similar to yours. Even if the movie is not good, what they've demonstrated is that this can be done, right? You make a movie in secret, you manage to keep it quiet, and you drop it all at once, as one might drop, let's say, a Beyoncé album.
Sure.
And eventually, this is going to happen with something more eventful on the content side. Eventually, this is going to happen with a Star Wars movie or a big kind of a Marvel movie or a James Bond movie or something like that. Or something on that level that has that built-in, people are so excited the way they are about a Beyoncé album, that everybody stays home from work.
Right.
I mean, you're going to get that movie eventually. So even though I don't have much interest in watching the movie, I'm fascinated by how they did it and how this works.
Well, think how human brains work, right? So as hype, as anticipation.
Yeah.
We had no hype, no anticipation, and yet this thing still sucks to the degree that it did. So it doesn't disappoint because you had half an hour to be like, what's going on? Wait, what? And it's not disappointment exactly. Yeah. It's just arrant suckage.
Yeah. Glenn Weldon. Good pick. Thanks, buddy.
I don't know how to follow that.
And yet you will. We are going to get our clip from our pal Audie Cornish. Hit it, Jessica.
Otto ist ein alter Hundsfott und soll sich endlich aus meinem Leben entfernen.
What are you doing?
I don't care none what Otto says. I just had to see you for myself.
Hmm.
Otto.
Otto.
Who's speaking German.
Mm-hmm. know?
I don't think I know.
The last voice sounded like he was sort of doing a bad Nicolas Cage impersonation.
Well, it sounded like a guy out in the woods or something like that.
I can't believe I'm actually stumped the panel.
Really? You stumped the panel. You stumped.
There was a little bit of a twang in one of the voices.
Yes, there was.
There was.
Well, was a little bit.
That's what I mean by saying like a guy out in the woods.
Hee-haw, 2018.
That actually would have been preferable to the time I spent on this piece of regrettable television.
Uh-huh.
This is a clip from Godless on Netflix.
Okay. You can tell none of us watch.
Yes, exactly. All right, so I don't feel bad going after this a little bit because I think it was on a couple of folks' best of lists.
This is actually, I've heard people saying good things about this.
Some people really like it. We heard there Merritt Weaver, who was an actress who had been on Walking Dead, who I really like. And, you know, it's a Western and it had been billed as like a Western but with lady parts.
Mm-hmm.
So I saddled right on up. You see what I did there, Netflix?
Yeah.
Just to very quickly set it up, this is a scene where a German woman who has been on the run from her abusive husband is found by a private detective he has hired, and that private detective is in love with her. Now, this actually sums up everything that's wrong with the series for me, which is that it makes a feint or a nod at kind of interesting ideas and characters, like a woman running from an abusive relationship in the Old West. Let's see what happens next, you know? But then it actually doesn't care about it all that much. Huh. And so you have this weird non sequitur of a scene where she's speaking German with no subtitles and then, like, rips off the pants of the private investigator. And it was just one
as
a woman is wont to do when you gaze longingly through the male lens, which is also another issue I have with Godless, which is that, again, it nods at this idea of, oh, there's this mysterious town full of women.
I was going to say, isn't this the one with the town
of Michelle Dockery. And... Yeah, it's a town of widows. How will they defend themselves in this wild, wild west?
Yeah.
But it's actually just, it's still just about men shooting each other, which is fine. But I do think right now, like with Westworld, you have an example of a Western that tries to turn the ideas inside out and tries to figure out, like, what about this stuff is machismo? What about this stuff is fake? What about this stuff is actually reflecting, like, different political ideas about when any given thing is made? But Godless just feels like an exercise in futility. This feels like another instance of a Netflix line item where they have spent a tremendous amount of money on great actors you like, spending a lot of time on long, kind of tedious prestige television approach, but it just doesn't come together. Yeah. It makes about as much sense as this German lady in the Old West ripping off the pants of an investigator.
It's interesting because Glenn was talking about how with the Cloverfield thing, you didn't have the issue of disappointment. And I think one mistake that Netflix made, and this is really the reason I didn't sit down and watch it, was that they had marketed it really heavily as it was this Western, but with this town full of women. And then as soon as the first reviews came out, the critics that I trusted were immediately saying, like, just so you know, it's not that. It's that a little bit. Mostly it's not. Mostly, in other words, like, I'm bothered at one level by Netflix not making a Western with a town full of women. I'm bothered at another level by them not making a Western with a town full of women and pretending they did.
Right.
That I really don't like. That kind of makes me feel like now you're trying to make me think that you hear me and what I want when you don't. So,
yeah, because I'm fine watching whatever, you know, if it's a regular Western,
but
I'll,
like,
watch that, but don't try and fake me out.
Exactly. That's how I feel.
Well, that's it.
There might be a through line here because when they did promote the Cloverfield Paradox, you know, 30 minutes before they aired it, they aired it as, this is going to explain everything that happened in Cloverfield. Nope. If we had this conversation even 3 years ago, Netflix was at the top of its game. Netflix was the vaunted kingmakers. And now, just because they are churning out so much, 50% of the regrettable television we've discussed is Netflix. That's just a byproduct of just churning out as much as they're churning out.
And they still make, you know, they made American Vandal, which we really liked. They do, you know, One Day at a Time, which we have really liked. There's a lot to recommend what Netflix is making, but they're putting out at such a tremendous volume that there's going to be something that you dislike practically every week if you watch everything they have. Yeah, it's a good point. I'm glad you brought that, Audie, because it reinforced that I will not watch it. Thank you guys so much. That brings us to the end of our show. Follow Audie Cornish on Twitter at NPR Audie. Thank you so much for being here, Audie.
Thank you for having me. We missed you guys.
We missed you so much. And thanks to you guys as well.
Thank you.
And of course, thanks to all of you for listening. We will be back here on Friday with our Oscars preview. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people to find the show. And we will see you all back here on Friday for that Oscars preview.
Do you love trivia, puzzles, nerdy games, and humor? What about interviews with actors, musicians, and people from all walks of life? Yeah? Then join me, Ophira Eisenberg, host of NPR's Ask Me Another, every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.